I think we're ready now, so.
All right.
Please, I'm your full name, please.
Retired pastor W. Clayton Nielsen, living in Elkhorn, Iowa, and I have served parishes at Denmark, Kansas, Withy, Wisconsin, Omaha, Nebraska, among the Danish, and then I've done interim work at Solvang, California.
Okay. When and where were you born?
I was born at Lake Benton, Minnesota, which was a small Danish-American colony just west of Tyler, founded just about the same time. And we got together with Tyler somewhat, but Tyler was more Danish than we were. Mm-hmm. We had good Vidian pastors. The pastor who ordained me was born in Vyborg, South Dakota, grew up in Denmark, mm-hmm. and then came back here. Mm-hmm. His name was Harold Ibsen.
Okay.
And I remember in my youth, and I think this would probably be good to get, he would have a whole lecture series at the parish hall in the evenings and invite the people and cultural and historical things.
Mm-hmm.
He was well read and wanted his people well educated.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Where would that be? Where was that?
That was in Diamond Lake, on Lake Benton.
Okay. So your family background, what was that?
Family background, my father was son of immigrants, Nielsen and Nielsen. They were born in Geising, down in southern Denmark.
Yeah.
My grandmother came from the same area. My mother's parents, I don't know exactly, but they spent a little time in Norway, but primarily they were Danish.
Mm-hmm.
They were immigrants as well.
Mm-hmm.
My father met my mother at Albert Lea. My grandparents came over in about 1890, and they retired about 1917, moved to Albert Lea because they had friends there. My father had got a job down there and had a friend who had a girlfriend who was my mother's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So the I have some notes that you see in the Perennity Kirke and the other. So I'm a sort of a hybrid.
Okay.
I can gain entree to those people who are a little suspicious of the Grundvigians when I mentioned that my mother's sister's husband was a son of P.S. Wieg.
Oh yeah.
And P.S. Wieg was mm-hmm. one of the leaders of the old ULC.
Mm-hmm.
You see, this gets me in both books. So I grew up in Minnesota. My father was a farmer, raised purebred hogs and cattle, was a member of the state legislature before he was killed in an auto accident, and very active in just about everything in the community, a very progressive farmer. My mother had been a teacher before she was married. After my father was killed, she became a teacher again, and she was active, did some translating work from Matisse Anderson's book, Kevany Haven in Diamond Lake. I think that copy got down to the museum. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
We got about 25 of my books recently, so
mm-hmm.
The archives down
yeah,
there.
Yeah. How did it come about that they moved to Diamond Lake area, your parents?
Well, my grandfather had a friend named. Anyway, he went out and he got my got farm started for my grandfather before my grandfather came out here.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandfather came to Diamond Lake, and they had relatives up there too.
Mm-hmm.
Old Matisse Anderson was a cousin, and he was one of the pioneer farmers up there, or farmers, and mm-hmm. his son was a beekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
But they came to Diamond Lake, and when my father, after my father was married, they moved up and moved back to Diamond Lake, took my mother away from Albert Lea from parents. My vacations as a child was to go to Albert Lea a couple times a year, which is mm-hmm. a 200-mile trip to visit my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So we kept in touch there.
What about your childhood? Did you have any siblings?
All right. I have three brothers, a sister. One brother who died when I was just a baby died of complications of scarlet fever. Mm-hmm. I had a young brother 2 years younger than I named Wayne, who became a realtor out in Los Angeles, California. My sister married a local boy, a non-Dane, who was a research physicist and chemist, worked for Eastern State Standard Oil. Mm-hmm. She died early of cancer. I had my youngest brother, Everett, was ordained later, and he was working on his second book when the when he had a stroke. He's still living down in Southern California. Okay. But he was he served in both Connecticut and California, and was a bishop's assistant for a number of years. So some of his experiences go into the writing of that book.
So you grew up on the farm.
Grew up on a farm. Enjoyed being a 4-H club member, country school.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate in having an excellent teacher in my first years, and at least average education. I finished my 8 grades in 6 years, which was fine, except when I got to high school. Education I was doing fine, but emotionally and psychologically I was too young.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were advantages and disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
And my father died when I was a senior in high school, so I stayed out a year before college. And my father was very good to allow me to work, to learn by experience in farming.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to drive a tractor very young. I learned the breeding stock of the hogs, so that when my father died, I could still carry on in the purebred Poland China hog business. By that time, I was ready to go on to college and seminary. I decided, by confirmation age, that I wanted to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
I had parental encouragement along this line. My father and mother loved to sing, and they would sing duets. Not so much in the Lutheran church, but they would sing for the Baptists and the Methodists.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some very interesting experiences having gone along with them. We had an old one-armed Baptist pastor named G.R. Spiller, who moved out to South Dakota, and my folks would often visit him once a year. And I can remember the old pastor introducing my parents and saying they're 24-hour-a-day, 7-day Christians. I remember my father saying on the way home he was too good to us. As my father died, my mother remarried a local man who was some related, and this man's sister married Torvald Kjær, who was a pastor in Lyø for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Denmark, down on the island.
Yeah.
His son, there's done some writing.
Okay.
He may have met or may not.
Not
his name
was
Kjær, K-J-A-E-R, Kjær.
Not sort of right away.
Well,
it's... Why did you go to, you went to college first?
Oh, I went to high school at Lake Benton, 4 years.
Yeah.
Got my degree there, stayed out a year, and was really planning to go to Dana. I suppose on the matter of my mother's family, and graduated at the junior college, and that case was that good enough education.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my pastor said, if you're going to the ministry, you really ought to go to Grandview. So I went to Grandview.
He was of the Grandvigian tradition. That was obvious for him to say that.
Yeah.
His influence.
Yeah. I had good relationship with him and his wife through the years.
That was Ibsen.
Ibsen.
Yeah.
And when Ibsen left Diamond Lake in Minnesota and Lake Benton, he moved to Kimbleton,
mm-hmm.
where he met my wife. She was a young woman.
Oh, okay.
And when we were dating, we went invited us to the cabin up Lake Okoboji. So, through the years, we had good relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I had his funeral, I had her funeral.
Oh, yeah?
So, you see, there's been,
sure.
been good relationships through the years.
Yeah, sure. So you went to Grandview?
Went to Grandview 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then to St. Olaf College to get my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And back to Grandview for, I graduated from St. Olaf on a Sunday afternoon and go to the seminary, the Grandview Seminary, on Monday morning after an overnight train ride, 1 week late. This was during the war.
Oh, yeah.
And we had an accelerated program, so we had summer school the first summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent 3 years at Grandview.
Seminary.
In the seminary.
Yeah. Together with Charles Henson, by the way.
What?
Together with Charles Henson.
Together with Henson. He was in junior college when I was there, and he was in seminary when I was mm-hmm. there.
13, yeah.
Between my last 2 years of seminary, I served an unsupervised internship down in Denmark, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the earlier Danish congregations, very well-educated people. The congregation was organized in 1878.
Mm-hmm.
The church was quarried out locally, hand quarried limestone, walls about that thick.
Mm-hmm.
The church still stands.
Oh, I never heard about that.
I heard about Denmark. That's,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard about the place, but not the church.
Well,
okay.
And then when I finished seminary, I was called to go down there. My wife, meanwhile, had gone to Grandview for a year, and University of Northern Iowa, and taught for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We were married then after I had had a few months of bachelorhood in the parish. She was a tremendous helper. She was
mm-hmm.
a master teacher, really.
Was that in Kansas?
She was
in Denmark, Kansas.
She taught in Denmark, Kansas. Every place that I was a servant of the parish, she taught.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So.
In the local school.
In the local school.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a theory that if the family was going well, she let it go. But if she had money to start, she'd help it start and then step back and let the people
mm-hmm.
take over.
Mm-hmm.
And she did well at that. I really didn't realize, honestly, how much of a master teacher she was until after she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
We had a night before the funeral where it was just a chance of visiting and singing and people talking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of our former students came back and it was
mm-hmm.
tear-jerking.
Okay.
But, all right, I finished seminary. Well, I was in Denmark, Kansas. I was elected president of the youth group of the church.
Mm-hmm.
President at that time was also sort of the adult leader.
Mm-hmm.
So I had sort of the dual position. So I was a leader in that for about 7 or 8 years. And at that time, that's about the time that the Danes published, are you familiar with The World of Song?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was a product of the old ALC, and the two people who were most significant in putting it out were Estensa Chesprus, the pastor's wife,
mm-hmm.
who served here in the Middle West, and Alice Olson, the wife of Arnold Olson, who did a lot of post-war work for the United Nations in Germany.
Sure.
So I personally got to know a lot of people.
Sure.
I served, in various positions, and the old ALC was not large. My first district was, we called it District 7. It included Kansas, one congregation in Kansas, one in Colorado, one in Texas, one in Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and several in Nebraska.
Okay.
It was a big district.
I did see.
And I visited all those congregations.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they were small.
They were small.
And of Grundtvigian background.
That's right.
How would that be shown, like in the...
How would that be shown? I suppose the interest in the cultural things. For instance, I grew up in a rather, conservative home where dancing was sort of frowned upon. I've taught folk dancing all over the United States.
In these congregations?
In these congregations.
Yeah.
I teach folk dancing at Solvang every year. For the folk meeting, we have two
days
of folk.
You do that still?
I still do it.
Oh, good. Good to hear.
But the first summer in Denmark, Kansas, on Wednesday nights, as we're during the war, the young people of our home had nothing to do. They couldn't go anyplace. So we have a week, an evening of folk dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the cultural aspect of the Gunvegan heritage. I was back there 10 years ago, and there were still links in folk dancing.
Well, there were. That's interesting.
It's interesting.
So that's one of the characteristics.
Yeah, I think so.
Singing would be another.
And
the lecturing you were talking about also, you said that there was Harl Ibsen or...
Harl Ibsen lecture at Dan Lake. And this was common in many of the congregations of the older pastors. My generation didn't do too much of it.
Was there not any much enough interest, or what? Why do you think?
I think lack of interest, changing times.
Mm-hmm. But singing and folk dancing, people will still spend an evening with that.
Whether it be Danish or English, that deal was the same way when I came. Most of the andag singing in the evening was in Danish.
Mm-hmm.
When I left there 7 years later, it was all English. It was over the change in time and change.
In Kansas?
In Grandview College. Well, see, I from the time I started college, it was mostly Danish and English. From the time I finished college, it was mostly English.
But that was not 7 years.
Well, 3 years of junior college, 2 years of senior college, and four years of seminary.
What year span was that?
40 to 42 at Grandview, 42 to 44 at St. Olaf, 44 to 47 at Grandview.
And during these years, it would have changed through respect to the language.
A lot of change. Now, the pastor who followed me a couple years later at Whitney, Wisconsin, claimed that I was there during the time of the major transition from Danish to English.
Yeah.
Pastor Elsie Bungard, who had been there ahead of me, Bungor.
Yeah.
Really awakened the people. He was one of these old-time lecturers, and he was a go-getter.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, he and a member of the congregation, I understand, almost had fisticuffs one night. Disagreement.
Oh, yeah?
Boxing.
Oh.
But he awakened the people, but we went through the transition, not so much language-wise, but culturally, from Danish to English,
mm-hmm.
the 9 years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of helped people work through that transition, I guess. When I came to Omaha, we were downtown. The congregation was having difficulty, you know, still meeting only Danish descendant people, mm-hmm. primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt we needed to do something. Well, we were picked up by the Board of American Missions about the Lutheran Church in America and relocated, and about 80% of the congregation went with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to do some fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
The first fundraising program we had a $20,000 goal. It doesn't sound like much nowadays, but in those days,
mm-hmm.
it was a lot.
True.
And we raised $27,000 the first day.
Well, that's a lot of money. Yeah.
The man went out and called, when he came back, he told about an older lady who lived right across the street from Exarban, where they had a racetrack, and she would park cars in her yard for money. She was crippled in bed, and she gave them $10, and that was the biggest gift they got that day as far as, you know, people really giving. You know, and by the time I left Omaha, the congregation was giving at 7.5% of income. It took a lot of money to build a church.
But you said you relocated the church.
We moved from downtown.
Yeah.
The original church was downtown, and then they moved out to the suburbs,
mm-hmm.
which was 22nd Street, which was downtown when I came there. So then we moved way out northwest, 60 blocks west and 60 blocks north of downtown.
Okay.
And
because you're...
We needed a new field to cultivate, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
There were a few Danes moving into Omaha. We wanted to be an American church,
mm-hmm.
and but we had the strength and the nucleus of the congregation that moved with us.
So it succeeded.
It's going well, even now.
Yeah, because Omaha is supposed to have a huge fairly large population that would have some sort of Danish background.
Yeah, both banks of the church.
Yeah.
And then they had two Danish Brotherhood societies. They had Danish Vandalist Society with had a little park of their own. Mm-hmm. The Danes were very active in Omaha.
Yeah.
And the national headquarters of the Danish Brotherhood was in Omaha at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the national president was a member of my congregation. So whenever the Danish Brotherhood had a big meeting in Omaha, they had to have a quote-unquote chaplain to have somebody that knew how to pray.
Yeah.
And I say that with tongue in cheek. But I was part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted them, they accepted me.
So all these congregations you're talking about were the Danish church that later became AELC and what we call the Grundtvigian tradition.
Yeah.
How would you say that this background would be shown in, let's say, in church life? Would there be any specific thing in the service?
You said church life. I think first of all the vacation church schools in the summertime, not as they call it, Bible school.
Yeah.
Here in Kimbolton and other places, they would have a day of religious studies and Danish history. In the afternoon here in Kimbolton, they had folk dancing and they had crafts for the boys and sewing for the girls.
Yeah.
You see that?
Summer school. Yeah.
And you see the ULC, the United Danish, they had the religious system, but not. But most of these congregations were similar to a greater or lesser degree.
They would also have this kind of summer school.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that I think that's part of the church life.
Absolutely.
The cultural aspect.
Absolutely. That's what
and
I think.
And of course,
about.
I'm sure it was in the sermons. As a young man, I probably didn't appreciate it as much as I should have. But I don't know. Have you read Joy Ibsen's?
Not yet. I bought it and I've been looking in it, so I can see that that's the kind of thing you talk about in his sermons. In the others.
As a teenager, I didn't realize how good his sermons were.
No.
Oh, but reading her book, it was it brought back some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in confirmation class, we didn't have a book. Harold Ibsen lecture, talked to us, shared things, which is a spoken word.
Would you say there was a certain outlook, certain values that you would maybe not be aware of then, but that you later have thought about this was the case in your church, in your congregation?
And of course, I noticed it in my own congregation. I had to remember that my mother was grew up a Holy Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were interested in the cultural thing, primarily in music.
Yeah.
But dancing? No. When it came time to college, was I going to dance? Well, the girl I was going with loved to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't dance, she'd find somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when it came time the first year, my second year was her first year, came time to have the folk dance exhibition in the spring for Studentafest. She was going to be in it, and if I didn't dance with her, she was going to get somebody else. So I had to learn to folk dance.
Yeah.
But having to learn as a young man made it easier to be a teacher folk dance. I knew how I learned.
Yeah, sure.
So I just grew up with it, take it naturally.
Yeah.
When we were in Wisconsin, we went even down to a national folk dance group that met at the state capitol, and I brought my young people down to that. By the time you're teaching some of those boys to folk dance, I played the girls' part.
Right.
You know, to help them get the steps.
Yeah.
I was kidding one of the boys one night who was rather reluctant to folk dance. And I said, you know, if you learn to folk dance, you could be a better basketball player because you'd learn better footwork. He came to me 2 months later and said, it was true.
That's a good one.
You know.
So that was worthwhile.
It worked.
good.
Well, as I mentioned too, that I was national president of the youth group for a while, mm-hmm. which allowed me to meet nationally with the youth leaders of the various 8 Lutheran bodies in the country. So I mm-hmm. I got acquainted around in mm-hmm. that area.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the church we located in Omaha from downtown out in the country, I got to meet with some of those people because mm-hmm. I had been involved. You know, the Danes didn't establish too many congregations. We established a few, but we met with these larger national bodies who were establishing. And because they knew me, we got a loan to build to relocate in Omaha. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was, they knew my Senate President too, but I had a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's who you know as well as what you know.
That's true, certainly.
And I served in the old Danish church as secretary and president of the various districts from time to time. Mm-hmm. So I was involved in the total life of the, mm-hmm. the church. And as we set up meetings, district meetings, and also the synod meetings, we saw too there was some cultural aspects, not just Danish lectures.
Mm-hmm. Along all this, these activities, did you have any? Did you go to Denmark in those years?
We did not go to Denmark until our golden wedding year. My father-in-law wanted me to go to Denmark after college.
Mm-hmm.
I should have gone. I didn't.
Why did you? Why did he want that?
Well, I felt it would be good to have the background, but the reason I did not go was he had such a high opinion of the folk schools in Denmark that I was afraid I wouldn't be able to live up to his expectations,
mm-hmm.
that I would disappoint him.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go.
So he wanted you to go to a folk high school in Denmark?
I go to folk high school in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
As many of the older Danish American pastors did,
mm-hmm.
and it stood them in good stead. But I did not have that experience. But I had the experience of seminary teachers, preaching the Grand Duke, Janus Knudsen, and Ernest Nielsen, who knew that background.
Absolutely, yeah. So that probably what was just as good, at least.
Well,
because the folk high schools in Denmark at that point would be very mixed, I think.
I think they were, and I was aware of some of that.
Yeah.
But not as much amazing as I could have been. But I don't know. My Scandinavian library is the top 2 shelves.
Oh yeah.
And a third of the books are Danish. I can't read them, but I like to look at them.
You don't read Danish.
Very little.
Yeah.
My parents spoke Danish when they weren't supposed to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a little. I went to Grandview, took 2 years of Danish.
But in your home, you spoke English.
You spoke English in the home,
okay,
exclusively.
Yeah.
Except when folks didn't want us to know what they were talking about, and that didn't last for me, I being the oldest living.
Mm-hmm.
But then at Grandview I took 2 years of Danish and mm-hmm. learned enough that I could read some. I can write better than I can read, or could. And then when I went to Solvang after I retired, mm-hmm. they still spoke a lot of Danish out there.
Mm-hmm.
They had Danish services once a month.
Still?
When I back in 20 years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
I would do the Danish communion, mm-hmm. and we would have the pastor would come up from Yorba Belinda,
mm-hmm.
and preach the Danish service.
Mm-hmm. From LA. You're from LA.
Yeah.
Angeles, yes.
The first Sunday that I had the Danish communion, an old pastor's widow came up to me and said, "We understood you better than we understood the pastor."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I speak Danish with a bit American accent."
Mm-hmm.
But I did enough Danish. I learned enough Danish
mm-hmm.
that I could do communion in Danish.
Mm-hmm.
When I came to Withy, Wisconsin, the Danish Ladies' Aid wanted the Danish devotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take my wife's Danish hymnal, read a scripture lesson for Sunday, and the collector went with it, and that was it. I got an A for effort, probably a D for quality, but I tried, and they appreciated it.
All these years, when you were serving in these different congregations, and there was some kind of Danish background all the way, the Danish
right.
tradition all the way, but it was carried on in the English language now.
Mostly.
How would you be much aware, or just to a little extent aware this tradition in your
well,
in your church life, in your daily life? Was that something
I
you
think,
did?
I think
that
it
was just
it,
a
it
matter kind of
all right, I think primarily at Christmas. You have a Yule again. Everybody's saying you don't have a Yule again around the tree.
Yeah.
So you're saying around the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
We even did that home with your daughter, man, but we did it anyway.
Okay. Oh yeah.
But there would always be a Christmas party after Christmas for the children and the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And the young people would do it with folk dance and their parties.
Mm-hmm.
The children didn't, but I would go over to Tyler for their post-Christmas party, and we would,
mm-hmm.
had a cousin who took me over there, and we would folk dance over there.
So that was just your traditions.
Just
no matter where they came from, that was just.
Yeah. It wasn't labeled Danish or Norwegian or such.
Exactly. And that's
how. We just grew up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that, because you don't put labels and stamps on whatever.
No, you don't.
Whatever you do in your normal daily life.
Don't.
Of course not. But were you familiar with the name Grundtvig in those days? How would you say that you got.
I was familiar with
him
because his name appeared under all of the hymns we sang.
Yeah, sure.
I suppose with Harold Ibsen particularly, it came through in his sermon and his lectures. And then, of course, when I went to Grandview, well, we
mm-hmm.
did a lot of it there, both in the seminary and in the church there.
Like, for instance, that you would read some Grundtvig writing translated into Danish.
He'd be quoted in translation.
Sorry?
The Grundtvig would be quoted, but in English translation.
Yeah, sure. So you would have some English textbook or whatever quotes from Grundtvig. You would know of his main ideas and what he stood for.
Through the sermons and through the... Well, Grandview was part of the whole atmosphere of student life.
Yeah.
For instance, we always had in the middle of the forenoon a so-called religious service. And more than likely, if Joe Knudsen was doing it, it would be something on the latest thing in the news.
Okay.
You know, it was the cultural thing again coming through.
Before lunch?
Yeah, about 10 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
About a half hour.
So it was short lecture, kind of.
Short lecture with singing a couple of Danish American
mm-hmm.
songs,
mm-hmm.
usually. And a 15-minute sermon or lecture, or
mm-hmm.
one or the other. Never knew for sure which.
But not necessarily in the specific religious thing in it.
No, it was called, I think it was called morning. I don't remember what we called it. We also, Grandview, we also had in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
At 10 o'clock, everybody came down for coffee.
In the evening.
We were a student body of 40.
Yeah.
About there. Just like a big family.
Sure.
And then we'd go upstairs in the living room and in the dining stool and sing some songs and have a religious thought,
mm-hmm.
and then we might sing the rest of the evening till 10:30 when it's time for the girls to be locked up and the boys to say goodnight.
Yeah. So that would be all the students?
Not only the
seminary?
No, the seminary was a small part. The seminary was probably never more than 7.
At a time,
sometimes as few as 3. Before I was there, there was just one in the seminary at one time.
In the whole seminary?
The whole seminary.
Wow. Yeah?
Before my time, very often you would go into seminary after 2 years of junior college.
Mm-hmm.
About the time that I was in college, most of the young men had gotten their bachelor's degree first and then came back to seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them were married by that
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia and I chose not to be married, to complete our education first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't regret that at all. We dated for 5 years before we were married. That's a long courtship.
Yeah.
It's a long courtship.
Sure.
But I don't recommend that long courtship, but for us it was good.
It turned out well. Sure.
But, you know, we were married 60 years, but we had 65 years together in a sense.
Yeah.
We shared things.
So, this cultural, spiritual background that was obvious that it was part of your group. It was just in the atmosphere.
You know,
and
we grew up taking it for granted.
Yeah. Would you once in a while, when you met with other groups or other people outside, elsewhere, would you sort of be more aware of your specific outlook, your values?
Yeah, particularly when I met with the other leaders of the other Lutheran groups.
Yeah.
For instance, someone was ganged up on them one night. Three or four of them were on the radio, and we posed a question about dancing, which, of course, for most of them was a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they accepted what we did. Some of the Norwegians and the primarily Norwegians had their Danish Christmas annuals. Let's see.
Oh yeah, magazines.
I'm sure you've seen them, but I think I can pull them off shelf rather quickly. I know where I'm looking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not that one. Wrong one. I'm afraid this is. I mean, this is the Yule Grand.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, we had those. They were common in the holes.
Yeah.
Rest of them I haven't got moved down here yet.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in the early days, the youth published a monthly magazine called Ungdom.
Yeah.
And it was Danish and English.
Mm-hmm.
Then later we had our own publication. Later we had a page in the National, in the Church magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I was looking for, but I don't have them here. They're up at the house.
Oh yeah.
But they're published on the similar format to Julegran.
Yeah. And they would be of both.
Well, they would have very religious articles in them, very secular short stories.
Mm-hmm.
Would have both.
Yeah.
Okay. As I said, I haven't got totally settled. I don't have my English Christmas one.
No.
Just put it on the floor. That's all.
Yeah, that's good.
I'll find where it goes.
Yes. So this tradition has been characteristic of several things, like your singing and folk dancing.
Singing and folk dancing.
And lecturing. And
lectures.
And a certain outlook. Would you also say it also was to be seen in the political atmosphere?
I've been told that. A few years ago we had a series appear of where they came in about 4 or 5 days and do cultural studies, and we did one here on the Danish American life. And
mm-hmm.
Where am I going? Running my off my head now. I think the Danes tended to be more liberal politically than the ULC.
In the Danish Church.
The Danish Church.
Happy Danish. Well,
in fact, one of the Mac attenders one year said, wondered if the influence of the folk school in Kimbleton had students toward marriage and things like that. I'm not whether it did or not, I don't know, but I think the Danes, the Glyphians tended more to be Democrats than Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And the ULC tended more to be Republicans than Democrats.
Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't know. That means that you would not know of for instance the political outlook of your congregation and your ministers.
The party you belong to was grew out of your cultural heritage. My father was in the legislature, for instance, in Minnesota. They were elected without party designation. In other words, you were not labeled either Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
There were Republicans and Democrats. And in Minnesota, they had what they call the Farmer Labor Party, which was a liberal wing of later of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
My father was an independent, and he was in the legislature. He worked very closely with the more liberal group up there when he was out, and locally, the liberals were always on the candidate against him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was interesting with my father in politics.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be so simple as to say that the Glenveagans would be Democrats. So.
No, it wouldn't be that simple.
No.
But many of them were naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you got to the old ELC conventions, there was a liberal bent more so than you would find in the UELC conventions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that would have an effect on well, that was part of the whole outlook, wasn't
part
it?
Part of the whole outlook.
Yeah.
It was unconscious on our part, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking back now, I'm 87, I can look back and see some of those things have a little perspective.
Sure.
I didn't see it all when I was there.
No, that's what happens when you are in the middle of a group. You don't think about what is this group. You're just
part of it. I just wanted to look at what I jotted down this morning.
Yeah,
so good. For instance, my wife's uncle was a seminary professor for a year.
What was his name?
Baldemar Sayers Jensen.
Yeah.
Yes, Jensen.
Yeah.
He and my father were the only two of their family of eight were born in this country. The rest were born in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife translated copies of the letters of my grandfather, her grandfather, written back to grandmother. My daughter has them on a computer out in California now, putting them in good format. But my wife spent time, mm-hmm. a number of days and weeks doing that translating.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's grandfather conducted religious services in the schools in the area related to the folk school that's here in Elkhorn.
Mm-hmm.
The students would come out there and here these two little boys would pass out the hymn books. And the story goes that the boys were talking one time when their father was conducting the service or whatever. One of them should be a minister. And I said, yeah, that would be a good idea. One says, you be the minister and I'll support you. And those two brothers were so close through the years. My father-in-law was in road construction, bridge construction. And his brother was a pastor. And those two were as close as twins. They, mm-hmm. they visited Denmark and they called them one was the contractor and one was the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
But they used, those were not the words they used. I can't remember the words right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my father-in-law would have encouraged us to go to Denmark, but the only other parish, how do you afford it and how do you get the time for it? Mm-hmm. So we didn't go until after we retired. We're all over there for a short time, too short mm-hmm. a time.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go again if I didn't have to take that plane trip.
Yeah.
Coming back, we had the back seat on the plane. I had no noise in my ears of mm-hmm. engines for 12 hours.
Yeah.
It's too much.
That is a little long. It's a little long. It's a long trip.
But I enjoyed Denmark.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see many of my relatives. The only relative I was going to visit was my stepfather's sister, and she died between the time I'd been raised to go there and the time I got there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't talk to her son on the telephone mm-hmm. when we were in the town right off the island of Lübeck.
Oh, yeah?
And that's mm-hmm. the last contact I've had with him.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody met me at the bus, a close friend that told me that she had met his head in her house in Omaha,
mm-hmm.
that my father-in-law's sister was deceased.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some relatives over there on my wife's side.
Mm-hmm.
On my father's side, one of the first women pastors to be ordained was a cousin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know her name. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, tidbits stick, but...
Yeah.
You
wrote some notes.
I wrote some notes.
Would you have more to say about this tradition in the church?
No, I don't know. I think
we've been round of a... I think we have. I have 65 minutes now.
Well...
And so, if that... Is that it? So
I jotted down was... If you had seen Annette, talking about Harold Ibsen and the early life up there, the youth work of the Danish American People's League, World
mm-hmm.
of Song,
mm-hmm.
Ruth Herman's thesis, which I will try to get for you.
Yeah, that's good.
Some of the seminary professors, D.S.
Yeah.
Jensen,
yeah.
The card file list of the Grimbergian books that I have
mm-hmm.
that I've put up. And if you're interested, I can just... make sure you get a card file that she borrowed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'll stop my laptop here.